The halachas that we've discussed up until now were building up to a lot of the practical dinim that we'll be able to discuss this week. We approached the kitchen. We introduced the need for fire. We introduced in the first shiur about different ways of cooking, when a pot is off the fire, when a pot is on the fire. We discussed the ladle and the possibility that when it's removed from that original kli rishon, so then it still retains its status of the capability to cook from a ladle, because we view, according to some poskim, that it has that kli rishon status, and even when you're pouring from a kli rishon, it's still going to be mevashel to an extent. What we said was that was mevashel kidei klipa. And we brought the example that if you have something that can't get cooked, the outer peel or the outer surface, although a liquid and a solid we said can, and we are concerned about being mevashel directly onto something, but something that doesn't get cooked, like a bottle, so iroi from a kli rishon, pouring from a kli rishon, would be helpful in such a state. But with that exception left out, everything else really you have to be concerned when you're pouring directly from a kli rishon, or if you take the example that Miriam mentioned, if you would just pour from the soup bowl itself, soup pot itself, onto something that wasn't cooked, so that potentially could be mevashel if it was hot at that time. Last week we discussed different issues of how cooked is cooked, and not only an item that's cooked, but also an item that's baked or went through some other stage of heating up that has to be concerned, that we only apply the din of ein bishel achar bishel after something is fully cooked. Yeah. Hello? Serena?
Yeah, so I know I missed last week's shiur, but I listened to it last night to catch up. But I was wondering, what's the din of something that's roi l'achila and you want to heat it up on Shabbos? Meaning, like, I don't know, we discussed raw things, right?
We mentioned in the first shiur that we hold that if something is roi l'achila, as long as you're cooking and you're improving it, in Hilchos Shabbos, we paskin that is a potential Isser D'Oraisa. Although in other areas of Hilchos Bishul, like Bishul Akum, that wouldn't be the case. And we are Mekel, the Sharat Zion quotes those Rishonim that are Machmir on that Shaila. And we are very Choshish for that's potentially an Isser D'Oraisa. So any, whether it's an apple that could be eaten raw or a carrot that could be eaten raw, all of these items are definitely a potential transgression of Bishul, and you want to for sure stay away from any cooking process on these items. And we pointed out that not only when they're raw, but even when they're not mevushal lagamre, that would be the case when it comes to Bishul. Last week we discussed the leniencies of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, where that applies, and its limitations. Its limitations, the distinction between solids and liquids, and what is the definition of a solid, what is the definition of a liquid. We broke that down into many different examples of how much moisture, majority, not majority, or if there's just some moisture on the top of the chicken. And then we spoke about if it didn't go through the cooking process, but it rather went through some other heating process, so it would definitely be something that we should be concerned about if we're introducing a new method that poses issues with taking sometimes a process of something that was boiled and now heating it up. So we suggested at the end of last week's shiur the kula of the Chazon Ish about what the definition of tzli is when it comes to Hilchos Bishul. But fundamentally, what I would like to talk about tonight is we kind of stopped the kitchen and the pot at Iri Kli Rishon, which really lends itself to this concept of a tremendous kula that the Gemara introduces, that when you're actually past Iri Kli Rishon, and I want to make sure that everyone understands what I'm formulating over here. When you're actually dealing with what's called a kli sheni, so the Gemara makes the statement, kli sheni eino mevashel. And you read this Gemara, when you're in a kli sheni eino mevashel, you're smooth sailing. When it comes to something in a second vessel, something that's, again, let's put this into perspective of our first year. You're no longer in that first fire. You're no longer in that first pot. You're no longer in that first receptacle. And now you've been transferred. Where have you been transferred? To something else other than that first fire. So then that's what's called an halacha kli sheni. And that would have this tremendous kula of kli sheni einu mevashel. So let's just take a few seconds, just because it is sometimes a little confusing. And the reason partly that it's confusing is because not everyone was in agreement about this, namely the Chazon Ish had a chumra about this. But we're not going to talk about the Shita of the Chazon Ish right now. We're going to go with the mainstream approach, that if I'm dealing with a kli off of the heating element, even if it's an original receptacle, like a cup that's being filled up from an urn, that would be totally not the kli rishon that was on the fire. It wasn't even the kli rishon that's off the fire. It's already in a different vessel, and therefore that is what's qualified. That's what's qualified as, and what's called what we're classifying as kli sheni, that the Gemara is saying eino mevashel. Okay, so again, I'm distinguishing between the pot, the original heating element on the fire, distinguishing between that and the pot off the fire. Both of those things in the first year we said, those have full bishul capability. The second, it's transferred to a new keli, a new vessel. So that would be what we're talking about, kli sheni eino mevashel. First, one has to understand, why should that be? You have something, you take a thermometer and you take the temperature of a kli sheni, that thing could be piping hot. That could be, you know, up to 140 degrees. I don't know, 170 degrees. And afal pichen, Chazal will tell you, ignore it, kli sheni eino mevashel. That's the way we paskin. How's that possible? It's yatzel lettuce. This is something that really should be chayav mishum bishul. So there's a fascinating idea that Tosos introduces in Masechet Shabbos, that Tosos says it's all dependent on the vessel. And since you're no longer in that original vessel that you were cooking with, namely what exactly like I just introduced, that you're transferring it from that original kli rishon, and now you're in new walls, new kalim, a new vessel, a new pot. So that's what Tosos says, by definition, the dofanosov are mekaros. The walls of this vessel cause it to cool down, and you don't have the ability to be mevashel in such a kli, because the walls never met the fire. And since those walls were never on the fire, even though they're containing a liquid entity that might be piping hot right now, it will cool down. It won't have the capacity to accomplish the bishul process with these cooler walls, or these walls that Tosis is classifying as dofanosov mekaros, as opposed to a kli rishon that was once on the fire, that it's dofanosov are mechamamos. The walls of the vessel have the ability, are still hot, and therefore they have the capacity to cook. Another way to approach this is that it's just two steps removed from the fire, and therefore we learn like a tolda de tolda. The Or Sameach has this idea of a tolda de tolda when it comes to bishul, since it's two steps removed, therefore it doesn't have the capacity to bishul. Whatever the rationale is, take either one of those ideas. That is why even if something is piping hot, even if something is above the shear of Yad Soledis, it will not have the ability to cook when it's in a kli sheni. Okay, if this is the case, and if this is what the Gemara says, wow, we have a tremendous leniency on our hands. We can put whatever we want inside anything that's, as long as it's not in that original vessel, as long as it's not in that original kli rishon, and now we have the ability to cook in a kli sheni. So that's what the Gemara sounds like. The problem is there's another Mishnah. The Mishnah later on in Masechet Shabbos says as follows. I think we introduced this Mishnah already last week, but the Mishnah says as follows. Listen carefully. Kol shelo ba b'chamin me'erev Shabbos, madichin oso b'chamin, chutz mikul yasa aspanim umidag maliach. Anything that wasn't cooked in hot water or cooked up from before Shabbos, madichin oso b'chamin, you're allowed to do something called hadacha with hot water, with the exception of salty fishes and whatever kul yasas panim, I don't know, we'll call it herring for now, whatever. These types of exceptions to the rule and whatever those exceptions are. So let's just analyze both of these statements. Kol shelo ba b'chamin me'erev Shabbos means this item was not cooked from before Shabbos. This is what we spent a while on last week, discussing the idea that if it was cooked from Erev Shabbos, then, hey, do whatever you want with such an item. Because once something is Baba Chamin me'Erev Shabbos, once something is Bishul, then what's the halacha? Ein Bishul achar Bishul. Then you don't have to be concerned about repeating the Bishul process. As long as something's Mevushal, and it went through that Bishul process, and according to some, maybe solid, according to some, also liquids. That was last week's shiur. So then you could do whatever you want. But we are talking about, says the Mishnah, something that never went through the Bishul process. Kol shelo bava chamin me'erev Shabbos. And on that, we only allow you to do what? To do meidichin oso b'chamin. What does that mean, meidichin oso b'chamin? What is that referring to? This new process called sprinkling. Sprinkling what? Sprinkling from where? So this was a major debate amongst the Rishonim, some of the grandchildren of Rashi, that had this discussion. What does Madichin Oso B'chamin mean? What is the Mishnah permitting you to do when it comes to this raw item that wasn't cooked? Obviously, it's not going to permit you to cook because you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. So what are you allowed to do? So those Rishonim that weren't concerned with what we presented in the first year, namely the Shita of the Rashbam, that held once you're out of a Kli Rishon, even if you pour from that original pot, there is no Bishul when it comes to a Kli Rishon, even if it's Iroya from a Kli Rishon. So that's exactly the way he reads that Mishnah. And he says, Iroya is Mutter from a Kli Rishon. You're not allowed to put a raw item into a Kli Rishon. But as long as you're not putting it directly into a Kli Rishon, if you're pouring from a Kli Rishon, so says the Rashbam, that's what the Mishnah was permitting you to do when it came to something that wasn't cooked from Erev Shabbos that has an Isser Bishul on it. We, as we pointed out in the first year, do not paskin like that. We are concerned, like the Rabbeinu Tam writes, that you're not allowed to pour from a Kli Rishon. As we pointed out, we might not have the capacity to cook thoroughly, to cook absolutely, to cook the entire entity, but we do hold that pouring from a Kli Rishon is Mevashel Kedei Klipa. And we pointed out that if you're cooking even the outside layer, that is Chilul Shabbos, no matter how much it is. You have to be concerned even for partial Chilul Shabbos. That's a serious concern. So if that's the case, that if something is raw, and we know you're not allowed to cook its outer layer, so what does Madichin mean when the Mishnah says Kol shelo ba b'chamin me'erev Shabbos meidichin oso b'chamin b'Shabbos? What could that possibly mean? Rabbi Nutam yelled at his brother, cousin. I don't remember, but cousin, I think. So he says to his brother. Shkayach. So his brother, he says to him, how could that be? How could you say such a thing? Rather, said the Rabbi Nutam, it means you're pouring from a klisheni. You're pouring from a klisheni. Why? Because pouring from a klisheni is not a concern. Good, fine. So this fits very well with what we're saying, that when it comes to the world of klisheni, we're much more relaxed. Like the Gemara says, klisheni in a mevashel. As long as you're not connected to that original pot that was on the fire, kli rishon, and even if you're in a klisheni, so then you're okay. So that's going to be something that's going to be permitted. The problem is the last phrase of the Mishnah. Chutz mi the heron. Chutz mi kul yisai spanin umidag maliach. Except for certain exceptions. I don't understand. You just told me klisheni is enem avashel. You told me that a klisheni doesn't have the ability to cook. So why is there certain things on the list that are now being excluded? If it doesn't have the ability to cook, then it shouldn't have the ability to cook for anything. What is this Mishnah talking about? So this is the major question that we have to answer in order for us to know what we're allowed to do in a klisheni and what is our procedure after we leave the world that we've presented of kli rishon and irei kli rishon. So this was a debate amongst the rishon. Some of the rishonim said, yeah, it looks bad. You're right. The Gemara is true. Kli sheni ain't a mevashel. And if you want to know on a biblical level, there really isn't any more a transgression midoraisa when it comes to a kli sheni. But midrabbanon, on a rabbinic level, there were certain things that looked like they were getting cooked in a kli sheni, and that's what the Mishnah was referring to. The Mishnah limited the halacha of kli sheni and a mevashel because bad policy. It doesn't look good. These things are now looking like they get cooked up, even though technically the idea that Tosas told us that really is no deoraisa biblical bishul that's existing on a pot that was never on a fire, because these walls are cool and they don't have the capacity to be mevashel. You need hot walls from the fire in order to violate a biblical transgression. But it looks bad because these things are getting hot and it looks like bishul and people aren't going to know how to distinguish. So that's one approach. Another approach is that there's something called an halacha kale habishul. Kale habishul is a phrase that's translated to mean these items cook very easily. If these items cook very easily, so the Mishnah was telling us, yeah, we're very well aware that there's this concept lahalacha called klishena in a mevashel. But there's only sometimes that concept applies. That doesn't apply where you're dealing with something like kulius haspanim or like salted fish, dag maluach, that the nature of these items, that any heat has the ability to transgress bishul, even if it's in a klishena. That's called kali habishul. That is the shita of the Mordechai and the shita of the ring. If that's the case, so then you're back to a potential biblical transgression, and you could violate Hilchos Bishul just like we presented in the Kli Rishon and in the Iroi, the pouring out of a Kli Rishon. So now we assumed what the Gemara said, Kli Sheni, then you're smooth sailing. Comes along the idea of the Mordechai and the Irem and says, not so fast. There are certain exceptions to the rule. Look at the Mishnah. Kol lo babacham and Merav Shabbos. Chutz medaga meluach. You see that there are some exceptions to the rule. So now the million-dollar question is, okay, so where does the rule apply? And where does the exception to the rule apply? That is a very heated question amongst the poskim in Hilchos Shabbos. Namely the following. The Mishnah Brura tells us when a person makes tea on Shabbos, the only way he can make tea is if he does something from before Shabbos. One of his suggestions that he suggests is for you to make tea essence before Shabbos. Well, what does that mean? It means heat up the tea, make sure that the essence is already made. Then on Shabbos, you'll fill up a hot water cup from the urn. You'll have the water in a kli sheni. Then I will pour my pre-made essence, that dark tea, the dark water, into that cup of water. And that's the way I'll make my tea. Why? Because for me to take the tea bag and to put it directly into a kli sheni, Mishnah Brura is concerned, maybe that's one of the kali habishul. And you have to be choshesh that it's a safek d'oraisa, says the Mishnah Brura. You have to be concerned that it's something that could be cooked in a kli sheni. So that's why the Mishnah Brura suggests to make the essence beforehand and to pour the water into the kli sheni. Right? So you see that the Mishnah Brura took the approach that unless you know for sure that it's not Kali Abishal, the fact that we don't know that it is Kali Abishal is not necessarily going to be a solution to put it into a cliche. It's only things that the Gemara might have told you explicitly that this is not Kali Abishal, namely what? Water, oil, and the Gemara calls tavlin. The Gemara tells us spices are allowed to be put into a cliche. So those are three examples of things that you can't argue with that would be permitted to put into a cliche. Water, again, water, oil, the Gemara says, and spices. Now, spices, according to the Gemara, would be a tremendous leniency. So now I could just take any klisheni, anything that wasn't in the original supah, even if it's in a second kli, I can put my spices directly into a klisheni. So Reb Shlomo Zalman says that you're not allowed to do so. Reb Shlomo Zalman says the spices that the Gemara was talking about were not as ground up and tiny like our spices, Bizman Hazeh. So Reb Shlomo Zalman even limits the list of the Gemara of what we know, what's not Kali Abishal. Meaning I told you the Gemara had three exceptions and three cases that you know for sure they're not Kali Abishal and they're permitted in a klisheni, meaning the back to the original Gemara of klisheni in a mevasha. Shlomo Zalman thinks that our pepper and our spices that we're going to put into a klisheni would not be included, and one should not do so because our spices are ground up so tiny, they would be back to potentially be Kali Habisha. So you see from the way the Mishnah Brura suggested how to make tea, that the Mishnah Brura was concerned that not only are all these things Kali Habisha, but even other liquids, even a tea bag would potentially be an issue of Kali Abishal. Is everything clear so far? Clarifications. Can I see anyone? Where are we holding? Yeah.
So according to the Mishnah Brura, you would say that tavlin is not, that tea is not tavlin, meaning like the tea.
Correct. Absolutely. Okay.
And then also, I don't know if this is, I'm conflating two ideas, but could you say that this would be the Mishnah Brura l'shitaso al tzbishlach, ein bishlach or bishl, meaning like you're mamish putting it back into the water. So he would say that like the bishl aspect. Brura holds
there is bishlach or bishl.
Right, I know, but I'm saying that, like the whole entire chop that we said last
that's a little bit of a problem. Why is the Mishnah Brura allowing this? If we argued last week that when it comes to a liquid, there's yesh bishel acher bishel,
but not liquid, by a liquid, meaning by a davar yavish.
We're not talking about a yavish. We're talking about a liquid.
The tavlin was made in. It was made in.
No. Water. You're done with the tavlin. You use the tavlin. Take a tea bag. You use the tavlin. Yeah. You made the essence. Now you have a dark. You have colored water. You have your tea, right? Yeah. I don't know. Like, give me a red zinger. Okay. You make a red zinger or a fruit flavored tea. So now you have this fruit. You have this water. It's basically mayim with the flavor inside of it. Right? The tea bag was thrown out. Let's say the tea bag was thrown out. Okay? You don't want to pick it up. There are other sugyas that we're going to have to get into in terms of borer with the water, with the liquid dripping. We're not going to get involved in that. We're going to throw it out. It's done. Or we're not going to lift that out. So now, but now you're reheating liquid that probably cooled off from earlier in the day. So that's something that we're going to have to really get back to. That if he really thinks that klisheni has the ability to be mevashel, so why is this even permitted to make tea essence? Even making tea essence should be a problem because you're reheating liquid And that should be, according to what we learned last week, that should be a violation of Yesh Bishel Acher Bishel B'Davar Lach.
Does it make a difference that it's in a Kli Sheni?
So we're going to get there. If Kli Sheni is Mevashel, and we hold everything is Kalei HaBishel, so then maybe we should be concerned with the fact that we're reheating a liquid in a Kli Sheni.
Well, maybe that's why we do Kli Shlishi, no?
So, but the Mishnah Berurah sounds like he would be matir even in a Kli Sheni in such a situation. So what's the answer to that question? So first of all, we have to point out.
Hey, can I ask another question?
Yeah. Who are you?
Basia.
Oh yeah.
Hi. You're talking though about things that were already cooked, right?
I'm talking about in terms of the tea. Yeah.
In terms of any of these things, like the tavlin, also you're assuming that they were
tavlin in the Gemara before Rav Shlomo Zalman was even something that wasn't cooked. If you have an item that was fully cooked, that doesn't lend itself to bishul acher bishul based on our shiur last week, a solid item that cannot be cooked, you could put that into a kli rishon al gabe ha'ish.
Okay.
There is no bishul anymore. If I have a meatball or I have a hamburger, that thing is fully cooked. I mean, you might have a history of putting it back on the fire that we have to talk about. But in terms of bishul, there is no bishul that is going to be usher with that. It's all.
So we're talking about raw things going into a Kli Sheni.
That's correct.
Except for the tea that is cooked, but that's a different thing because it's a liquid.
So that might be the answer. Okay. The answer might be that although the Mishnah Berurah is telling you that you have to be choshesh for Kali Abishal and you can't cook in a Kli Sheni, I think what Basi is referring to might be an answer that the Mishnah Berurah is saying, but to say Yesh Bishal Achar Bishal in a Kli Sheni, that far we're not going to go. Meaning, if you remember from last week, the whole entire concept of Bishal Achar Bishal in a Kli, by a Davar Lach was up for debate. Not everyone, although we do paskin that there is cooking when it comes to a liquid item, there is a concept of bishul acher bishul when it comes to a liquid item. And we are choshish for that. And therefore, we don't reheat liquids. But let's not forget, not all of the Rishonim were in agreement. They held that you should read the Mishnah, kipshuto. And when the Mishnah tells us, ein bishul acher bishul, that applies both to solids and to liquids. That namely the Rambam and the Rashba, they held like that. So says the Mishnah Berurah, keep in mind that whole issue of Bishul Achar Bishul by Davar Lach was a machlokes. So now to extend my chumrah of not knowing what's in the examples of Kulius Azbanim of Dag Maliach, what is considered something that could be easily cooked, a Kali Abishul, now to extend that to even a liquid that was once cooked, so that the Mishnah Berurah seems to be lenient about, and that far he's not going to go. So one leniency we know is that Kli Sheni Eino Mevasha will help for reheating liquids that were once cooked, even though in general in a Kli Rishon, or we would not be makel when it comes to reheating liquids, like we pointed out last week. The Chazon Ish disagreed with the Mishnah Berurah. The Chazon Ish was of the opinion that who says you have to be choshish that everything in the world is Kali Abishal? Whatever is Kali Abishal, or whatever things that you see, the Chazon Ish said, something that you see that's easily cooked, so you should be concerned. You see that it's cooking in front of you. So that's probably what Kali Abishal is. But now to be concerned with everything in the world, that maybe it's a Kali Abishal, Chazon Ish wasn't so convinced about this chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah, and therefore he was a little bit more relaxed. Although the Chazon Ish is not so helpful, because the Chazon Ish said, I'm only willing to be mekel as long as you don't get to a heat level, what's called yad nichves bo. It's the Chayei Adam has a chumrah that if you have something that's so hot, scorching hot, that's the level of a temperature that's even past Yad Seledesbo, that it's mamish going to burn your hand, Yad Nichvesbo. So then he thinks at such a heat level, even a klisheni has the ability to be mevasha. So I always point out the Chazon Ish fundamentally might have disagreed with the Mishnah Brura, but it might be hard to be makel based on this Chazon Ish, because you don't know, you're not standing there with a thermometer to know exactly what temperature your klisheni is standing at, that he would actually be lenient when it comes to all the other items that are not within the Kali Abishal of the Gemara. But it's important to realize that this idea of the Mishnah Brura was not universally accepted. There are many poskim that rejected it. And therefore, as we go on, we should remember that it is just fundamentally in question. Although I do think that the minig of Klal Yisrael is to be choshish for that. So that's really the issue when it comes to the klisheni to begin with, either because of Kali Abishal, like the Mishnah Brura presented, or because of Mechse Kemevashal. One of those two reasons. So a lot of times that really neutralizes the ability to use a klisheni. Some people might have a practice to make tea in a klisheni. Their families might have done that. There was a mesorah from the Soloveitchiks, and Rabbi Schechter points this out, that some thought that one of the examples of what the Gemara said, although I told you Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said that our tavlinim, our spices, are no longer included in the heter of the Gemara of what to put into a klisheni. However, Rabbi Soloveitchik quoted from his grandfather that he thought that tea bags and tea was a good example of tavlinim, and therefore, if that would be a good characterization of tavlinim, so then that would be permitted in a klisheni. So if one has that minig, so that would be a tremendous kula. But the next kula that I'm going to suggest, and that I think many people have this minig, which is Alpi, the psak of Rav Moshe. We only find that the Rishonim had a chumrah with regards to the second vessel, the klisheni. Namely, the Gemara told us, on a level of the Araisa at least, klisheni in a mevashel. We're not sure how expansive that permissibility was, where it applied. Namely, is it applying to everything, or are they Kali Abishal? That was the question that we just raised. But, says Rav Moshe, that doesn't apply when it comes to a kli shlishi. Said Rav Moshe, klisheni chazal asered, but lo matzinu, we never heard of kli shlishi. This was already something that the Prima Gadim raised. He was not sure about it. The Mishnah Brura himself was machmir on this shaila. However, Rav Moshe was machria against the Mishnah Brura, and he held that if a person takes it from that secondary vessel, again, that vessel that was never on the fire, and then puts it into a newer vessel, transfers it from that original receptacle to a newer receptacle, so it's already two stages removed from that kli that was on the fire, so then that would be something that does not have the ability to be mevashel according to everyone and according to all chumras. So those who practice like Rav Moshe have a tremendous kula, that as long as you transfer the water from a klisheni to a klishlishi, you will never have an issue of bishul on any of your items. However, not everyone holds like this, and especially that's more of a minig in America. Many have that minig because Rav Moshe was the posik in America. In Eretz Yisrael, that wasn't universally accepted because the Mishnah Brura did not give that suggestion, like we just pointed out. He didn't just say, put the hot water into the kli shlishi when you're making tea, and then dip your bag into the third kli, because he thought that there's no difference between a kli sheni or a kli shlishi. Even the Chazon Ish, who disagreed with the Mishnah Brura Lagabe Kali Abishal, he didn't think to distinguish between a kli sheni and a kli shlishi. He thought once you're out of kli rishon, all the kalim, no matter, even if you go to a kli revi'i, he thought they all should be equal. And there would be, if you're actually dealing with Kali Abishal, so then you would have to be concerned with that item, even if you're in a vessel that was very far removed from that original kli. However, even those that were machmir, like the Mishnah Berurah, when it comes to a kli shlishi, the Mishnah Berurah himself writes that I'm allowed to take challah, or I'm allowed to take croutons that were baked, and I'm allowed to put them in my soup bowl that's full of hot soup, and it's piping hot. And the question is, why would you be allowed to do that? So the Mishnah Berurah tells us, oh, because you should know that it didn't go directly into that soup bowl. It went from the soup bowl into a ladle, then to the soup bowl. And that ladle can be viewed as a kli sheni, and now the soup bowl can now be considered a kli shlishi. And you're reading this Mishnah Berurah, and you're like, I don't understand this at all. First of all, you told me that ladles, and I told you in the first year, that when it comes to ladles, we take a more machmir approach, that we view it as if it's its original kli. And I thought you're not makel and lenient when it comes to a kli shlishi. So what's going on over here? How is the Mishnah Berurah being makel to put the bread into this bowl that was collected through a ladle when it seems to make no sense through what the Mishnah Berurah developed in our shiurim up until now? So the Shmirah Shabbos Kelchasa suggests that even the Mishnah Berurah himself might be lenient by certain cases of kli shlishi and by certain cases of a ladle. Namely, if the whole entire thing that you're cooking is a question of ein yesh bishul achar afia, which itself was a debate amongst the poskim, so on such a chumrah, what we're about to learn is that combining chumrah sometimes might not necessarily be prohibited. So when it's something that, according to some opinions, might actually be considered cooked, namely the baking stage might act as bishul, although without any other leniencies, straight away just based on that, one can't be lenient and cook up something that was baked. But if you're putting it into something that might even be a kli shlishi, according to those that have viewed a ladle as a separate vessel, so then the Mishnah Berurah says that would be something that I would even be lenient to view the ladle as a kli sheni, and I would be makel on such an item. So you see that some of the ideas that we've developed up until now change when you're combining some of the klalim that we learned in the first two shir. Namely, was it universally accepted that there is cooking after baking? No. Some opinions, although we don't paskin like them, don't hold of that. Okay. And it's not even universally accepted that a ladle is considered like the first vessel. So you combine those two things, the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa thought, that was the rationale of why the Mishnah Berurah was makel when it came to the bowl of soup. And that's why, some people have the practice to be lenient when it comes to putting baked items into the soup. When it comes to croutons, even if it's in a kli sheni, the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa, the yellow croutons that I'm talking about. So when it comes to those croutons, so even in a kli sheni, that would be permissible because those are deep fried, and deep fried have the status la halacha, although it's called in English frying, but since there's so much oil that it's sitting in when it's being produced, so that by definition, since it's being used and cooked through a liquid medium of oil, and since it's very deep fried, anything that's deep fried sitting and doused in oil would have a status of bishul, and then that would be a solid item that would have the halacha of ein bishul achar bishul. So it wouldn't even get into the status of yesh bishul achar tigun, because halachically that would not be considered bishul. I just want to stop over here. I know things are getting a little bit complicated, and I just want to make sure that I'm with everyone because I can't really see anyone's faces. So sometimes when I give shiurim, I try to read some eye language, but I don't know. And all I see is I see black. So I don't really know whether or not people are following. So maybe you could just send me a thumbs up or something. Okay, I see a thumbs up from the faces that I see. Okay, any questions?
Is there a problem with putting...
Who am I talking to?
Rena Liebman.
Okay, yeah.
Is there a problem with putting like salt and pepper in your soup?
So pepper was what we discussed before, that Rav Shlomo Zalman said, even though the Gemara said tavlinim would be mutter in a klisheni, Rav Shlomo Zalman said that when it comes to our spices, so then a person should be machmir. So now, if that's the case, so then we view our pepper as potentially Kali Abishal. If you hold like Rav Moshe, so then if you're in a Kli Shlishi, that would be mutter. But it's not so clear, because you might not be in a Kli Shlishi. Because if you understand that the ladle, like we presented in the first shir, was to be governed by the first pot and a Kli Rishon, so then you're really in a Kli Sheni, and it might be a problem if you're just relying on the ladle to be in a Kli Shlishi. If you're putting the spices in your original pot, then according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, that would be something that would be a problem, because it's potentially Kali Abishal. Salt is a little bit of a different sugya. The Gemara discusses a debate. Maybe salt might even be mutter legamre. Salt, that's a big debate amongst the Mechaber and the Ramah. Lemaisa, we try to be machmir when it comes to salt, also in terms of bishul, but that's a chumrah. That's in terms of salt that was never cooked. A lot of our table salts were fully cooked, so therefore that wouldn't be a concern with our salt. But fundamentally, in terms of the Gemara's melech, that salt that was never cooked potentially could be cooked. And in terms of spices, so you wouldn't, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, you wouldn't have the kula of a Kli Sheni because it's so small and ground up today. So salt that was cooked is not a problem. That would be a problem. That would be an example of Ein Bishal Achar Bishal. Salt that wasn't cooked would potentially be a problem the way we paskin. And spices also, the way we paskin about our spices, that potentially would be an issue if it was hot and not in a Kli Shlishi, according to Rav Moshe, that everything is mutter. Yeah.
What does Rav Shlomo Zalman Aruch say about a Kli Shlishi with tavlin?
I think that he went with the Mishnah Berurah's approach of Kli Shlishi and the Chazon Ish of most of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael, that Kli Shlishi was no different than a Kli Sheni, unless you're in one of those examples of some other reason to be mekel. Okay, so we have, in the case of the tea, we have something that was cooked to be reheated, that would be mutter even in a Kli Sheni itself. We have in the soup bowl, which is a potential Kli Shlishi, maybe not, depending on the ladle, but even the Mishnah Berurah was willing to combine the fact that it was at least baked originally, so therefore that would create a permissibility. But again, you need, in all of those situations, you need something else to be relied upon, at least according to the Mishnah Berurah. And according to Rav Moshe, that's not true. You could even put something that's raw inside a Kli Shlishi, because we don't find anywhere else other than Kli Sheni that there is any chumras. Even a Kli Sheni, fundamentally, the Gemara was willing to be mekel. So now you want to tell me maybe they're Kali Abishal? So be machmir in a Kli Sheni. Rav Moshe thinks past the Kli Sheni in a Kli Shlishi, you don't have to be concerned. So if I had asked Rav Moshe Feinstein how to make tea, how to make coffee, I think it would be very simple. Just put it in a third receptacle, a third Kli, and that would resolve all of your issues. If I would ask some of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael how to do it, so then I would get different answers depending on if the item was absolutely raw or if the item might have been cooked prior, and therefore have some leniencies like we've mentioned. Okay, when it comes to what time is it? Oh, it's getting late. When it comes to coffee, so coffee is a little bit different. Coffee, there's instant coffee, and then there's raw coffee. So raw coffee is really going to be similar to all of the things that I've discussed and have all of the kulas according to Rav Moshe and not according to many of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael and the Mishnah Berura. However, what happens when it comes to instant coffee? What about instant coffee even in a klisheni? So that's an interesting question. There really isn't a clear answer. And a lot of times, and as we get into the 2020, the question becomes more and more complicated because companies develop new methods and new items to make coffee with, namely via coffee, all of these different types of instant coffees that some of the coffee is not preheated, pre-cooked, or pre-roasted, and maybe majority of it is. So I would suggest at least to do like Rav Moshe and to be machmir, because you never know. The Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa himself points out, even though one could argue that many of these items might be okay, to play it safe, and you don't always know, so just put it in a klishlishi, because over here there is another issue as well. Even if it is cooked, what happens if something is cooked, then roasted, and now I want to cook it again in my klisheni or in my cup? Is that a problem? Or do I say, how could that be a problem? In the original stages of this item being developed and produced, this item was cooked. How do I analyze something that itself had two stages in the production? It had a bishul stage, and then it had a roasting stage afterwards, and now I'm going to cook it again in my cup of hot water. So do I say, the Prima Gadim argues, once it's cooked, it's cooked. Whatever you do afterwards doesn't erase the cooking. Or do I say no? I say cooking is only a helpful through ein bishul achar bishul if that's the last stage of the process. But the second that I'm now introducing a new stage, that could potentially erase the old stage. And now that's what I have to analyze when I'm heating this up. What was the last stage of this item? And now, yesh bishul achar tzli. So that a little bit complicates the production of coffee because we're not always sure what exactly the method was and how much it was done, and also what was the last stage in the production process. So therefore, it's always safe if you're going to make coffee, at least in the klishlishi, if you're going to make it on Shabbos, if you're going to make it beforehand, so then you make some sort of hot water, then that's for sure going to be mutter, like the Mishnah Berurah himself pointed out. What about the milk?
Nick has a question.
Yeah.
Does it matter if you put the coffee in the cup first?
Or where do you am I have... looking?
Sorry, it's Basia.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have to be careful to put the water in first and then the coffee, or can you put the coffee in first and pour the water over it? Or is that like Eroi Klisheni and then...
Yeah, we paskin that Eroi, if it's Eroi, again, if it's Eroi from a Klirishon, so then that would be a problem.
No, right, but I put it in a klisheni, and now do I have to put the klisheni into the klishlishi without the coffee in the third cup? Or can I put my coffee...
You're dealing with instant coffee now?
Yeah.
So you're now pouring the hot water.
I take it from my urn into a cup. Now I'm taking it from that cup into my coffee cup. But is it a problem to have my coffee on the bottom of my coffee cup?
I don't think so. That's Eroi Klisheni.
Right, so that's not a problem?
Right. You're saying that that's not a Klishlishi yet. No, you have to pour it into a new cup, right. If you do it like that, you would have to pour it into
You have to put the coffee in after the water. Meaning.
Your question is, do you call Eroi Klisheni Klishlishi?
Well, I'm asking, do you have, like, is
Eroi Klisheni? I understand what you're asking. Yeah. Is Iroi Klisheni already the status of Klishlishi, according to Rav Moshe? That's a good question.
I feel like we've always put the been told to put the coffee in after, right?
Yeah, no, I think that that's
that, right. That,
yeah, that yeah, but I hear what you're saying, because halachically we view Iroi Klisheni to not be the chumras of Klisheni. But I would tell you to put it into a third cup first. But it's an interesting question.
And put the coffee in after.
Yeah, meaning what I'm saying is, since halachically you no longer are defining that water as within a klisheni anymore, so mm-hmm. one could argue already, oh, since there's no concept of irim avashel de klipa, so then that's already klishlishi water. So therefore, that should be mutter. Uh-huh. And I am not sure that that's wrong, because that is a klishlishi. Yeah, I'm not sure.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, why does it make a big difference?
Oh, I think the coffee does not get as melted when you have the what? Rena, you agree?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's very Shabbos. That's not how we do it during the week. It's not the
right. No, it's not as good.
What do you mean? During the week, you put it straight from the hot water.
Right, but I'm saying when you pour the cup and the coffee's not in the cup, the coffee doesn't get as melted, and then you end up having clumps in your coffee.
Yeah, I think that that's mutter.
Okay.
I think that that's mutter. I think that Alpidin, you're no longer in a klisheni anymore, and I think according to Rav Moshe, that would be considered klishlishi. I want to sleep on that a little bit, but I'm pretty sure that that's what we're going to come out.
Yeah. If something accidentally got cooked in a klisheni, is it usher to eat?
No, because that would be, first of all, some poskim would say that you don't have to be machmir on all kali abishal, and any time that we have a leniency to rely on, so b'di'evid, we would say that it's going to be mutter.
So there's enough leniencies because there are people who say technically okay. Yeah,
right, exactly, right.
Okay.
Okay. Fine. So what about the milk? Now that we're putting in the milk, so what about the milk? So this was a debate among some of the poskim. Do you view the pasteurization of the milk in terms of its production to now be mutter even in an earlier stage? Now say it's already cooked, and the Mishnah Berurah tells us that even in a klisheni, we know from the Mishnah Berurah with the tea essence, we can take tea essence and we can put it straight into a klisheni, and that wouldn't be a problem. That was the psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman, that he would say that you could put milk directly into a klisheni, but Rav Yashiv was machmir on that. But Rav Yashiv said, at least I'm willing to be makel when it comes to a klishlishi, even though in general Rabbi Yashiv wasn't necessarily be makel in a klishlishi by something that the Gemara itself wasn't machmir about. So many poskim in Eretz Yisrael took upon the issue, the kula of klishlishi when it came to things that weren't beferish in the Gemara. Serena, this might answer your question about what the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa. I believe he says in one place that if it's not definitely kali habishal defined in the Gemara, so then I'm willing to be makel like Rav Moshe of the klishlishi. He doesn't use the rationale of Rav Moshe, but he just says the idea that if it's something that wasn't beferish explicitly kali abishal, so then a klishlishi you could really be makel upon. So if you have Rav Moshe and you have the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa on items that are not beferish kali abishal or are not easily cooked like tea, or like bread that we could see could get cooked up very easily, were it not for the fact that it would have so I think on a lot of these items, you ultimately could be makel even in addition to Rav Moshe with a klishlishi. So the safe bet on any of these questions are to always make it a klishlishi, or based on what Basi is saying, the equivalent of a klishlishi to be outside of the klisheni, and pouring from that when you're making it. Okay, is that clear? I know it's a little complicated. Yeah. Okay, so maybe we'll stop here. I had a little more to add, but I think it's really getting late. And this was a little bit of a more complicated shear. Maybe next time we'll just chazer and we'll have some of the additional important halachos we have to get to in terms of these ideas of klisheni and klishlishi. But this is so far what we have. Maybe we'll hold off on the machshava this week just because it's late. Is that good? Or your call? I'm staying up. I don't want to hold you.
I'm okay still.
I didn't realize how late we were going. So
is it like an hour or like 5 minutes?
I was planning an hour if that was okay for you.
Can I just ask you a quick question?
Sure. Okay, there's the answer.
No, but I still want to hear Machshava after.
Yeah.
The thing you said about the burger, I might have lost you there, but you said like it's cooked, you can't cook it anymore. But isn't that type of, like, let's say it's like medium and like the, remember the first class you spoke about London broil, isn't that the same type of thing? It could cook more.
I think by a burger, it's easier to have something that majority of the people would view as cooked.
But like not.
Yeah. Meaning I think that when it comes to the steaks, it gets a little bit more complicated because you have a nice group of people that like it. Like I will never touch a steak like my father-in-law will eat. Like I don't even think it's like, I think it's alive. You know, so like, you know, no, like, so there, like if I would take his steak and I would put it on the fire, I would be choshish that that might be in a Zudarais because that thing's raw in my eyes. You know, again, you don't necessarily go in terms of a subjective level, how to define, but I don't think I'm alone in terms of that. I think there's a significant amount of people that would think that. I think he just likes to eat it very raw. So, you know, very rare. So yeah, then that's where
burger, they would just eat like a little bit more red. It wouldn't be rare.
No. Right, right. But I'm saying when you have a burger, there's just like, there's cooked and there's not. And then, you know,
right.
I think it's a little easier to define. Like even a schnitzel, you can have a drier schnitzel or you could have a moister schnitzel. But I think everyone would agree that that would be mavushel and you could put that on the fire.
Okay.
I mean, even the Rambam would hold that that's fully cooked. Yeah, Serena.
Just a quick chiluk. Isn't the whole chiluk between, I mean, just to quick clarify, isn't the whole chiluk between a klisheni and a klishlishi the iroi? Meaning like the defonos are they're the same, right? Meaning like they're both makaros, regardless. They're not having any heated element. So the whole difference would be an iroi. No, a klisheni and a klishlishi. Meaning, what's the whole thing that makes the difference between a klisheni and a klishlishi? It's so the iroi.
Either it's mechzik and vashel, or it's...
Okay.
Or you're saying...
Why is it any less mechzik and vashel than a klisheni?
It's more removed.
But the person who's walking by doesn't know that.
Sure they do.
Meaning, a pot is a pot.
It's outside that cup.
It's right, but a pot is a pot. Meaning, like, if you're taking it from one pot and you're putting it to another pot.
You're assuming that in order for something to be considered mutter, it's got to be in a new receptacle. Maybe not. Maybe it just has to not be in that second kli.
Right. So what I'm saying is that if we're going to make a chiluk between a kli sheni and a kli shlishi, then what are we basing it off of? Okay, so one. So you're saying mechzik and vashel. I'm saying
Even if it's Kali Abishal, it's only Kali Abishal in that original Kli. So the second it's off in the air, Bas Yisrael, right. Maybe that's already...
Since right, that meaning that's why you could say that what...
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
I hear what you're saying, but I don't know. Meaning what that is the subject that we're raising. Do you need the Kli Shlishi or do you just need it to be no longer in the Kli Sheni? I think halachically... We say that klisheni doesn't, outside of a klisheni, it doesn't have that capacity. So I think that we view iroi klisheni in halacha, let's say in Hilchos Kashrus. In Hilchos Kashrus, if let's say you have a shaila of something that poured out of a cup or a bowl, that's a klisheni, but it poured out of it. So iroi klisheni is nothing.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter.
We in Hilchos Kashrus, we're machmir for klisheni. We try to stay away from any shailas let's say you have, this is very important actually. A lot of what we discussed tonight was not only relevant for Hilchos Shabbos. A lot of what we discussed tonight, how setting up the different vessels is very relevant for shilohs that we have between meat and milk and for isurim that happen in the kitchen in terms of Hilchos Yaradeya. There's going to be a difference between something that's in the original receptacle, in that original Kli Rishon, or something that's going to be in a Kli Sheni. And now if we're going to be machmir for a Kli Sheni, so some poskim say, so then even if you have a shiloh of things that get mixed up in a Kli Sheni, so then you might have to be concerned. But the second it's outside that Kli Sheni, or it's pouring from that Kli Sheni, then everyone is mekel. Iri Kli Sheni is eino mevashel, and doesn't have any effects in terms of Hilchos Kashrus. Okay? All right, so just in terms of some chizuk, just very quickly, the Torah introduces to us Parshas Bamidbar, and we learned all about the encampment of the Midbar immediately before the Yontif of Shavuos. That is the practice that we have on a yearly basis. We make sure to learn about the Masos and the encampments and the Machanos that existed in the Midbar before Maimid Har Sinai. We're learning Hilchos Shabbos right now, and the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos discusses the following idea. Rabbi Yossi, when it came to the malacha of building and demolishing, so the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yossi held that you have to be soser, you have to be soser b'makom that you're going to build. They have to be connected. Soser almanas livnos b'mkomo is necessary. You have to demolish and then ultimately rectify it and build it to be productive in that same area, then you're obligated for such a transgression for that malacha of Bishul. So the Gemara raises the following shaila. How do you deal with the Midbar? How could you say such a thing if we're learning the Lamites Malachos and everything that we're discussing right now is learnt out from the Mishkan and the Machanos that we learn about in this week's parasha? So have a case of a Chilul Shabbos of Binyan and Stira when it came to the construction of the Mishkan? It was never in the same place. We were moving around all the time. So the Gemara answers a fascinating answer. The Gemara answers, Keva, the Pasuk says, Al Pi Hashem Yachano, Al Pi Hashem Yiso, that since everywhere we went, it was all with the commandment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was always an encampment of where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was instructing us, where he was directing us. So therefore, it was a stira and binyan b'mekomo dami. It was as if we were demolishing and reconstructing in that same area. And the question is, why is that so? If Rabbi Yossi requires that it should be in the same place, so what does it mean that, what does it mean that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu directed us and told us where we're supposed to go when it came to Hakamas HaMishkan, so therefore it's Kimkomo Dami. So I think this is something that really relates to us when it comes to this year's Shavuos, when it comes to this Hachana for Shavuos with the Midbar presentation of the Torah as the Parsha preceding Maimed Har Sinai, but it specifically pertains to us in this year. We are very much struggling with the fact that our Shavuos is going to look very different this year. We're already very much having a hard time. I speak to many of you about this, that it's just the kids are itching to get out. There is a social need. There is an emotional need for interaction. There is there's financial crisis that's going on, but there's also the fact that even just the celebration of the Yontif, the fact that it's going to look different and it's going to be so far away from what anything that we are accustomed to. So how do we have that same focus and that same appreciation for the Yontif? So there's a beautiful idea that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz said, But Reb Chaim Shmulevitz didn't only say this, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz lived this idea. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, you know, as he was leaving and running away from World War II, so there's a maisa that he was on a ship. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Hagon HaGodol, and Shemi Pivanu Chaim, that so much of our Torah is from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the ultimately became the Mir Rosh Hashiva. Supposedly, the story goes as follows, that they were on the ship for 4 weeks, and Reb Chaim Shmulevitz was learning a sefer called Shev Shmaitza. And he was so engrossed in that sefer, which is, I can tell you from the yeshiva, that is one of the most difficult svarim. It was written by the Ktzos HaChoshen, and it is delving into some of the most complicated sugyas in Shas. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz was so engrossed in the sefer, and the story has it that as they were approaching a shore, someone yelled out, "Where are we? Where are we approaching?" And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz yelled out, "We're in Shmaitza Gimel, Perek Gimel." You know, that was his location. That was where he was. And that was the only thing that mattered. And it really, you know, was really connected to something that Reb Chaim Shmulevitz shared with us on this Gemara, and I think is a very important idea. And it really is something that we could appreciate, especially this year. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says, when a mother is holding their child, so the mother is holding their child, there's no difference if they're in the doctor's office, if they're in the home, if they're in the mall, or if they're in shul. That child is coddled and is held closely by the mother, and no matter where you are, it's kimakomo damya. So a person who can relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and could say that I am loved by the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I trust in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I need to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam with the ultimate dedication and devotion, so then they can live their life, that it doesn't matter where we're actually located. It doesn't matter what the painting on the walls look like or what the structure of the building is. It's always Al Pi Hashem. It's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed. And no matter where I am, no matter if I'm on a ship, or no matter if I'm in World War II, or no matter if I'm in the Mir Rosh Hashiva, I'm teaching Torah in Yerushalayim, it's all one constant existence of Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yiso. The Mishkan, by definition, was different than the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash had a karka, it was endowed with Kedusha, that ad hayom hazeh, we have restrictions to go on Maimed Har Sinai, and I tell everyone that they're not allowed to go to that area, because that Kedusha exists ad hayom hazeh in the karka itself. That didn't exist when it came to the Mishkan. That didn't exist when the Torah introduces our Parsha in Parshas Bamidbar, where things were constantly changing, where things were constantly moving, and there was different locations, and there was picking up. There was Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, there was Al Pi Hashem Yiso. There was no karka that was endowed with Kedusha. There was nothing that was permanent, because it didn't matter. It wasn't about specifically, I'm going to be an Oved Hashem here, or I'm going to be an Oved Hashem there, or I'm going to act like this because this is my surrounding, or I'm going to act like this because this is what's propelling me. It's just a constant existence. And it's all a function of wherever he says, I go. Because I'm like that child that trusts in him, that relates to him wherever I am. And therefore, I'm always being coddled. And I know that no matter where I am, I have to act in that same way, and my shvuas has to look just like it did. So when we approach this yontif of shvuas, before, as we prepare this yontif of shvuas, specifically with this idea of a midbar And this difference of highlighting specifically this, of the Mishkan that existed in the Midbar, and that wasn't like our Beis HaKnesses, and that wasn't like our Mikdash, it allows us to relate to the level of the Yontif of Shavuos on a deeper level. And it now allows us to understand that everything that we're learning about, Hilchos Shabbos, Binyan HaMishkan, it was all talking about people that were focused on Al Pi Hashem Yachnu, Al Pi Hashem Yisoh. It wasn't specific to an area. It wasn't limited because it didn't matter. When a person has that perspective, when a person knows that that's the way to live their life, so then even if things are difficult, I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me. I know what my tafkid is. I know what my responsibility is. And this is, I'm going to make it the most lechatchila situation possible. I might have to think about how I can do it. I might have to make my own programs. I might have to learn with my kids myself. I might have to, you know, create an energy in the walls, but I'm going to do it the same way. And I'm going to make sure that that constant of concept of Midbar is something that's going to exist in my house, in my Kabbalah Satorah, with my Hashkafa of this Yontif and Mirtz Hashem of Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yiso. Mirtz Hashem, I hope that everyone will have a safe, happy, and healthy Yontif, Emir Tzashem, and will be able to be Mekabel the Torah just as much as every other year, because no matter where we are, no matter what the situation is, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coddling us, we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, we know ultimately there is a reason that we are going to be revealed in the future, not now, but there always is a reason, and like we spoke about last week, we're going to end up saying in Ivris, in Hebrew, B'lashon HaKodesh, we're going to say, Kol Ma She'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no longer have to say, Kol Ma De'avid HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'tav Avid. I just want to take a minute and just